Court Press is back.
It's back-ish.
We're back
for now.
Well, for now. That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, Husker football starts tomorrow. We're recording this on a Wednesday, but we wanted to get in the studio, talk some hoops, because, it is sort of basketball season for both of the teams that we cover.
True.
I mean, like, I've gone to practice. It feels real.
Yeah.
There are going to be games. They don't count. They're exhibition games, mm-hmm. but both teams, Creighton and Nebraska, are in action next month.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska going to Italy, Creighton going to Australia. So we do have some stuff to talk about. And plus, we haven't talked in a while since CWS. No. It's been a while. What's going on with you? Everything good?
Everything's all right. Are you back after your... When I come back from vacation, it usually takes me like 2 or 3 days to remember how to write.
I feel like it's been a whole month for me. Because I've gone a week here, a weekend there, a couple days. Just travel.
Yeah,
just go to different cities. Toronto. Hit up Toronto post Kauai. They still had a lot of Kauai love. Restaurants with little stickers on their windows that says Kauai eats for free.
Really?
Yeah, there's a banner that said, like, we love Kauai, keep stay or something.
Did you get, so like, had, a 50% off Kauai jersey?
No. Oh. Yeah, I know. That would have been great.
I know.
I was on the lookout, though. I was looking for that. I was looking for, like, a We the North shirt.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that would be kind of cool, but...
Nothing?
I mean, the thing is like, I was there a couple days after it was announced. Actually, I was in the airport, and it was the day that the news came out.
That he was going to Clippers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And people were, like... they were talking, you know, you could hear him talking about. And one of the dudes hadn't found out yet. He was like, I just hope he's not going to the Lakers, man. I hope he's not going to the Lakers. I was like, well, yeah, but he's not staying with your
Silver
team.
Lining.
So
yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. But so I think they're still in that. There's the euphoria from winning
They're kind of like so the Royals are extremely bad right now. But Royals fans generally don't care. They won the World Series a couple years ago. So like they're fine.
Still good with
so,
that.
So like Toronto's like. Close down the I don't care, like, kill the franchise. I don't care. That's fine. Right. We got a championship now. Like, that was really fun.
Yep. I kind of have that. I feel like would happen at Creighton if Creighton made the Sweet 16 or made a deep run in the NCAA tournament. If Nebraska wins an NCAA tournament game, it's like, all right,
cool.
We're good.
Yeah. Give me a couple more years.
What do you need? We're fine here.
Yeah.
All right, so you attended a Nebraska practice recently. I've been to some Creighton practices.
Yeah, let's start there.
You want to start with the Jays?
Yeah, let's just start with just in general, like what we've seen at practice, what we liked.
Yeah, yeah.
So what have you seen?
Well, I've seen a lot of teaching. I mean, it's interesting because Creighton brings back 6 of its top 7 scorers mm-hmm. from a year ago. Now, 2 of those guys are sidelined. Jacob Epperson's out. Marcus Sigurowski's out. Both of those guys had injuries. They'll be back. They're not going to play in Australia, but they'll be back by the time the season starts. So there's 5 newcomers, mm-hmm. and they're mixing those guys in, and they basically started from square one in terms of teaching ball screen defense and teaching defensive principles in terms of help rotation, double team, how to attack a zone.
Mm-hmm.
Basic things of how they want to attack in their transition offense, like all these little things that they typically would introduce the first or second or third or fourth practice mm-hmm. in September. So they're kind of getting a jump start on that, which is interesting. It's also interesting to see some of the veterans who I watched a year ago or 2 years ago struggle with those things,
mm-hmm.
now understanding it and trying to help some of the new faces.
It's so interesting to hear you say that. Because Fred Hoiberg's like teaching kids how to shoot a basketball. I mean, they're not like, all right, our zone offense, this is what we want to do. It's like, hey, let's go into a shell drill and like learn how to block out together.
Mm.
Like, just like very like they're to the point where when they pass the ball, they are still required to yell out the person's name that they're passing to, like a first grade practice. Like, you know, John.
Yeah.
So, like, it's funny because this is where these two programs are at, where, like, Creighton is kind of, you know, they're moving forward.
Right. They're starting to build. It's like Creighton is starting in, you know, Coach Mack's mind, they are starting from square one in terms of we are teaching the basics.
But it's
not, you know, I remember, Mike Riley took over for football and he had to teach the team how to huddle. Like they had like diagram it on the screen of like, oh, this is how you huddle, because they hadn't huddled under Tim Bud.
That's true. Yeah.
So they had to talk through a huddle.
Yeah.
kind of feels like that's what Fred Hoiberg's like teaching these guys.
Well, okay, John Wooden used to start every first practice with, here's how you put on your shoes and socks. Mm. Like that's where they began, which is like genius. Yeah. I don't think Fred really did that. I think he trusts that they can their stuff
tie
on
their shoes and
get
themselves suited up.
So when do they go to Australia? Kind of give me a...
Right, so they're leaving Thursday, tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
They're leaving Thursday, and then they're playing three games in Australia. And it's... So here's the deal that's kind of weird about it for Creighton. Jacob Everson's out.
Right.
Marcus Zagorowski's out. Kelvin Jones, who's a grad transfer big man that the Jays added over the summer from Idaho State. Pretty good, actually. I think he's going to fit in and find a role.
From just what you've seen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got ability to rebound, and he can finish around the rim, and he can block some shots. He's agile enough. He's got a lot to learn defensively in terms of their system and where to be. But, you know, assuming Jacob Epperson's healthy at the start of the year, they have Christian Bishop, who's put in a lot of work and who's bigger and stronger and more comfortable and confident. Like, you pair a Kelvin Jones with those two guys, and you don't have to lean on him for 10. More than 10 or 15 minutes in one single game, that's a good sign. But Kelvin Jones broke a finger in practice, so he's out for Australia. So essentially now the Jays are down to, they've lost three potential rotation players, or they're going to be down three potential rotation players. And then Tyshawn Alexander, who is the Jays' obviously potential leading scorer, best player, go-to guy, is playing with a Big East all-star team in the Pan Am game. So the USA basketball decided, instead of like picking and choosing different players to form a team for the Pan American Games, it went to the Big East Conference. And
really?
Said,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, said, hey, give me your all-stars.
Hmm.
So Tyshawn is on that team with 11 other guys, and they're competing right now as we speak in the Pan Am game. So he's in Peru, and he will join Creighton's team in Australia eventually, but... You know, he's playing, the action started today on Wednesday, and they play Thursday and Friday. If they advance out of the pool play, they'll play on Saturday and Sunday. So there's a potential for playing five games in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an all-star team, you know, so his workload's not going to be, maybe we're talking like 20 minutes a game here. But the idea that he's going to be playing a ton, then traveling across the world, essentially, to go rejoin the team, I don't think he's going to see a lot of minutes in Australia. He's for sure going to miss the first game.
When you fly from Peru, do you think you go east or west?
Well, he said he's going back up to L.A.
Oh, that sucks.
And then over to Sydney. Right?
Oh, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. So pretty awful travel situation,
that's
right?
Too bad.
So that's four guys. Tyshawn Alexander, right. Limited. Marcus Zagorowski, Jacob Epperson, Kelvin Jones, all out.
Yeah.
Now, the good news for the Jays is, like, everybody who go, they can play. They have a transfer, Antoine Jones, who came in from Memphis, who is a really good athlete, and I'm eager to see what he can do after he sits out a year. But he can play in this event. And so, they it's funny. After practice, Greg McDermott's, you know, they get done with their final set of drill work or whatever, and his standard line is always, they have two courts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, guards over here, shoot. Bigs over there, shoot. Mm-hmm. Guards on this court, bigs on this court. But after practice the last couple of days, he's just, guards on this court, big. We don't have any bigs. guards are here. You know, like that kind of, Christian Bishop's there, and they got a walk-on, a 6'8 walk-on, Nick Seal, who's on the roster too, but they kind of operate, they can operate like guards. So at the end of practice the last couple of days, they've basically just had a bunch of guards
on the
shooting,
same
on the same side shooting, doing their shooting drills for the last 10 minutes or so of practice. So we're gonna see some five guard lineups from the Jays.
Heck yeah,
some newer new age basketball
yeah.
from the Jays in Australia. So it'll be good for the players to get action in games, but it's going to be tough to gauge what it means.
Yeah, and so I was going to talk about this too, because Nebraska's in a similar situation where they're going to have most everybody there, but they're not going to be able to necessarily play everybody. But don't you think in some way, even with Creighton not having everybody there, that it's still crazy beneficial, because you just get these guys that, I don't know, I just feel like in some ways it's a good thing when you get all these bench guys and walk-ons to play with your starters and just kind of gel and mesh, and like it's just good practice,
right?
Don't you think?
I actually think, I mean, it Now, watching these guys play, it's obviously extremely beneficial for the new guys because they're seriously, day one of practice in July looked exactly like day one of practice in September.
Mm-hmm.
It resembled, I mean, the things they're talking about, those first few practices, they all felt the same. So for those guys, like when they go back and they, you know, they can kind of reset and, hey, decompress and, hey, what did I learn during July? Like, they'll be able to recall that pretty well in September. But I actually think that some of the veterans are really going to benefit from it too. I mean, a guy like Mitch Ballack, we talked about Tyshawn Alexander not playing as much during, I mean, he hasn't practiced the last 5 days with the team because he's been training with this USA basketball thing and in Peru. Like, Mitch Ballack has now sort of has the ball in his hands more often. He's getting to tinker and experiment a little bit more with attacking off the dribble and making plays for others, getting to the rim. I mean, we all know he can shoot. He knows he can shoot, and they're really confident in his ability to do that. But obviously, you want to have a multifaceted, more versatile pieces to your game. And for the Jays to kind of take that next step, they're going to need more. They're going to need to lean on more guys than just Tyshawn Alexander.
Right.
And so
it's a perfect opportunity for, like, all right, Tyshawn's fouled out. There's 2 minutes left. We're playing at Villanova. Mitch, need you to do what you did in Australia.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're getting early runs at these scenarios that are hard to kind of come up with anyway.
And it's interesting to see him sort of try things. You know, like he went down the lane, tried to punch on somebody.
Oh, really?
You know, he's figuring out ways to knife through the defenders and finish in different ways at the rim. Like, he's worked on jumping off the opposite leg to try to throw off the defender and finish him with the opposite hand. Mm-hmm. You know, different things to be more creative when you get to the hole. And so the defenders who are coming over trying to block your shot don't exactly know what's coming.
Yeah.
And also just trying to see the floor and be a playmaker, be a baller. So I'm actually really interested for him and Christian Bishop. I think the rising sophomore who, I mean, yeah, he's their only big man, the only scholarship big man, so he's going to get a lot of minutes. Him getting a chance to kind of showcase what he's worked on because he's put in a lot of work to get better and be a more consistent contributor. So those two who are returnees, while I do think it's going to help out the new guys, I think those returnees, too, having that whole summer to sort of experiment and say, like, okay, this is what I want to get better at. Let's try all these things. And then have the game atmosphere where ultimately it doesn't matter. But
right.
You're going against a couple of the teams they're going against are legit. Like, they could beat Creighton in Australia. So you're going against good competition, some pros. Let's see if this actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we gain some confidence and we can call on it later. That's sort of the mentality. I would think that those players have. So
have you looked at the other rosters they're playing? Did you recognize anybody?
I haven't
anybody?
Really studied it too hard, but
I didn't recognize any of the Italian players that Nebraska's playing. But I don't know how good Australian pro basketball is.
It's decent.
I think the
top flight is decent.
Nationally, I feel like they're always pretty decent.
But, you know, it's not their season yet, and so
how
many of those guys are on the team or around, and it's going to be hard to judge. I think one of the games it should be a blowout for Creighton, but the other two, I don't know. They could be pretty competitive.
So how many days are going to be there?
Oh, man.
Is it a pretty quick trip?
No, it's a long, because they're spacing it out. Apparently, Australia is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have not been.
I think it's the way I've always viewed it, I think I might be wrong. It's like basically go from Texas to like California.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
I got the lowdown from Jacob Epperson,
who grew up in
Australia. Yeah, he was telling, I mean, it's like imagine the United States a little bit more condensed, but everyone lives on the coast, and inside the island, there's nothing. So you have to, they're flying to three different sites, and, you know, one of them's a 3-hour flight, and so they're going to be there for, I think they have 2 or 3 days in between each game something like that. So they're there for like 10 or 12 days or something, maybe even longer than that. I think it's like 2 weeks. So the basketball piece is good, but then also the other, you know, team bonding thing, it's hard to really quantify that or really describe it, but the way that Coach McDermott kind of explained it to myself and another reporter today after practice was just that, you know, he'll talk to players who went on these trips or, you know, even the exempt tournaments where they go to, I think Creighton went to the Cayman Islands. Obviously, there's Maui and all those trips that you take as a team, and you get to do fun things. Like, the players sort of, you'll have moments that the players remember and they recall, and it matters to create new experiences together, that you share a story that so-and-so did this, and I can't believe he did this. This is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And that's your teammate you're talking about. It's not like, I mean, that kind of stuff matters, and it helps them build a bond that, that you know, will ultimately, hopefully, in Coach McDermott's eyes, show up on the court.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. That's half the reason why I think you do these trips.
Mm-hmm.
Is so you can... What you do after you actually play.
Right.
Because I think it's hard to do. Like, I mean, I just always think about, like, in some ways, I always think that football and basketball teams, when they go on the road, even just getting on a plane together and flying to Ann Arbor, like, and you get off the plane and you got to go eat somewhere and you got to be at the hotel, like, that's like bonding no matter what.
Right.
Because you're away from your environment and you have to mold in some way. So doing it in a totally foreign country, yeah, it's no doubt. It's the benefit.
Do you think that's the primary objective for Nebraska?
For Nebraska? Yeah, I do. I think that there are going to be times. We found out today that we can't watch the games. We had been told.
No live stream. Watching stats. Yeah. That's fun.
We had been told that Nebraska was working with a company in Italy to try and stream the games, and for whatever reason, that fell through. And so now we will get post-game recaps and hopefully box scores and like daily radio interviews. They're sending a radio guy over there.
Oh, okay.
So we'll get those in the evenings, I imagine. It's like maybe interviews with Fred. I don't know. I have no clue. So I think the play is sort of important, but I think it's going to be pretty ugly at times because this is a brand new team, and not brand new in terms of like, well, we got three more freshmen coming in and we lost four seniors and we got to figure it out. No, like totally like everybody basically came to a basketball camp and got thrown on a team. Like, that's brand new. Like I said, yelling each other's names while they're... Fred Hoiberg admitted that he's called people the wrong names. And so he kind of painted us a nice picture that, you know, the big benefit of this trip is after these games, they'll all go to dinner together. And they'll sit around a table, they'll put their phones away, and they'll basically just hash out what just happened. And get to know each other and kind of do that whole thing. And I think that's going to be more important than we realize, because most of the time after games, you know, during the season, you talk in the locker room, you get your meal, everyone goes their own way. People go out, they go home to study, like it's everyone goes away. And instead, they're going to go sit around a table, eat a meal, talk, and like talk about what just happened. And that's even sometimes more beneficial than the game itself. So doing that four times, I think, is going to be really important. Just kind of figuring it out on the fly. I mean, they're gonna not have two guys who I think some people would maybe slot in starters. So Cam Mack, I don't know how much he's going to play because he just got eligible to practice, but he was also in the hospital with food poisoning. So he hasn't practiced, and they're kind of well on their way in terms of implementing stuff and setting up their defense and their offense and all this stuff. So they've not seen him play yet. So how much do you, like, it's kind of hard to quantify how much he'll actually play in the games, even though he's eligible, right? And then Ivan Wydrago is playing in Greece right now at the under 18 championships, and he's one of Nebraska's two big men. And so, like, he's a guy that's going to play serious minutes, and he's not going to be there. So that's why I asked you earlier if you think it's beneficial when you don't have starters there, because I think for Nebraska, they're going to just... And plus, Nebraska's going to have two transfers who cannot play next year, Delano Banton and Derek Walker, who can play in Italy.
Right.
So even if they go and they win, because Delano Banton has 15 points and Derek Walker has 15 points, like, do you really learn something about yourself? Because those are two guys that aren't playing next year. So
maybe for like the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah, maybe it's like, oh, wow, these guys are free. And yeah. I think Delano Banton's extremely good. But I think that there are going to be times when the play is kind of ugly. And so I think if you can take the losses that they'll probably have and turn them into positives of like, hey, so this is what we're talking about in practice, and we didn't do it this in a game. And this is what I'm talking about when I say this. And this is what, you know, what did you, Cam, what did you see out there? Or Kevin Cross, what did you see out there? Or what were we doing right? What were we doing wrong? And it was just by happenstance. I actually happened to cover the press conference that John Cook gave, press conference. We met in like their meeting room before Nebraska volleyball went to China and Japan. And it was interesting because John Cook's perspective was, we're going over there to win. We need to win. And it's going to be really hard. It's going to be horrible and brutal. We're going to have to sleep on cots. Everyone's going to be hot and sweaty, and it's going to be terrible. But we need to go over there and win. This is where we're at as a program. And like, the game is what's important. And for Nebraska basketball, the games are pretty important, but the journey is kind of way more important. So it's just an interesting, you know, it's a good thing that they get to go because they get all these practices. They get to kind of start from square one. So that way, when practice starts up again in September, into September, they don't feel like they don't know each other, that they haven't been on, they've been on campus for a couple months and haven't really met or practiced or whatever. It's kind of nice that they get this early period to do all that.
Right. So what is there a guy or two that you're looking, I mean, we can't watch these games, but
that I'll be peeled for the box scores for?
It's important for, like, this guy will benefit from this.
Yeah. I'm really curious how Deshaun Burke does. I'm really curious how Gervais Green does. I'm really curious how Samari Curtis does. Because I was a guard, now I wasn't like extremely good, but just because I played the position of guard, I'm generally more interested in
Nebraska has all guards anyway.
And so, because they're all guards this year, right? So like, I got a question on Twitter. I kind of asked like, hey, what do people want to hear about? And one of the questions was, you know, Cam Mack, Deshaun Burke, Gervais Green, like, who's on the bench at the beginning of the year? And so I think this is the first time for Deshaun, I'm particularly interested because, and I wrote about this last week, you know, he was recruited to be the next James Palmer and Teran Petaway and Andrew White. Like, he was going to probably average like 18 points next year. That was the goal. That was what people wanted him to do. That's why he was recruited to Nebraska. And now, I don't think, I mean, he's not the guy anymore. He's one of many guards, and he's going to have to fight for playing time. He's going to have to fight to, you know, I think he could still potentially be Nebraska's leading scorer next year, but like, he's got to work for it a little bit more now rather than next year. You know, if Tim Miles was here, they would have been like, hey, Deshaun, shoot it every time you're open. Do whatever you have to do. And now they're like, hey, Deshaun, you can't do everything, you know? I think he's crazy talented, and I'm really curious how he pans out. With Gervais Green, I'm curious how he fits in to higher level basketball. Because junior college basketball is junior college basketball, and I don't mean to like diminish it like crazy, but it's just different when you get to the Division I level, and especially when you're playing like a Lithuanian pro team. Like, how does he fare then, you know? Because I went and watched him in JUCO, and there were times when that people just couldn't keep up with him.
Yeah.
And that's why he would score 8 points in a row, and it's because everyone was like, well, this dude's the fastest guy and he can jump that. Like, I'm not. So what happens whenever talent gets better? How does he adjust?
Right.
And then Samari Curtis, the practice that we were able to watch, I wasn't like over the moon about him. There was just some freshman tendencies that I wasn't necessarily in love with, which, you know, he's a freshman and we only got to see one practice. But at the same time, there was a lot of good feedback about him. I mean, when Deshaun Burke and Hanif Cheatham were asked, hey, who's impressed? They said Samari Curtis. Mm. So I'm curious if that shows up there too. I mean, I'm interested in everybody. That's the problem now.
Well, because I'm
also
new.
Well, and I also, so like those three in particular, and then I'm going to pick two more. Kevin Cross, he's true freshman, came out of nowhere, and he's basically Nebraska's only big man that's going to play next year that is going to be on this trip because Yvonne is going to be in Greece.
Right.
And Delano Banton plays point guard. You're going to love the dude once you see him play. He's great. He's like, take Isaiah Roby and then like stretch his arms out a little bit and like stretch his legs out a little bit, like a little less torso, and then give him like a... Kevin Durant has pretty good handles, but not great. So give him like Kevin Durant. Like, just, he can play point. He's great. Anyway, but Kevin Cross is like the big dude. He's the big guy.
Right.
And he can move some weight. I mean, he can move people in the lane. And I'm just kind of curious how that, how he'll be able to keep up, because they're going to have to play him. And especially with Ivan not there.
Right.
And then I would say Delano, but I guess in general, like, who's the leading scorer throughout all four games? Like, aggregate all of the four games, who's the leading scorer? Because I think you could make an argument for a lot of different people, and I think it'll say a lot. I mean, if it's guys who can't play next year, or if it's not a guard, or it's not a point guard, I'm fascinated with what the... Even if we just get a box score, I'm content with that, because I'll be able to be like, okay, this is interesting, because they took this many three. Like, they don't... I don't know how... Creighton doesn't take a lot of pull-up jumpers, do they? Do they take 15-footers anymore?
They're not advised to, but then again, they've got guys like Mitch and Tyshawn who are really good at knocking those down, so it's... I've seen them run out-of-bounds plays for, like, a baseline jumper.
Sure, yeah, okay.
Like a 15-footer that, analytically, not a good shot, but for the individual, it's a good shot, because that, you know, he can hit that at a high rate. So it's a high percentage shot for that guy for an open jumper. But, you know, if someone's in transition doing a pull-up jumper, usually that's not a good shot.
You're pulled pretty quick. Tim Miles advised them not to shoot. He said last year, we want dunks, threes, or like something. Basically, he was like, we don't want a 15-footer.
Yep.
And that didn't go well, because Isaac Copeland's game was about from 15 feet to 13 feet. I mean, that's, he had, he loved the elbow jumpers, just loved 15-footers. James felt like, and he was correct most of the time, James Palmer could score from pretty much anywhere. That included 15-footers, so he liked to take those. Glenn Watson loved to shoot off the dribble and didn't really care where he was, if he was 40 feet or, like, 8. This team has been advised heavily that you are no longer allowed to shoot literally almost anything other than, like, anything in the lane or threes.
Yeah.
And they implemented this four-point line, which is really genius, I think. And so I'm curious, the three-point shots, because I, from what I think... how much they need from their guards and how few big men they have this year, I think it's going to be an astronomical amount of threes that they're going to take.
Right.
And so I'm curious, over 40 minutes or however many minutes they play in these games, I'm curious to kind of look at all four games, average them out with Iowa State teams from Hoiberg's years, average them out with Nebraska last year, because they took the most threes in school history, and just see what it actually looks like. Because I think this season they could shoot like way more. I didn't answer your question at all, but I did talk for about 5 minutes.
That's what this podcast is about. We don't answer each other's questions. We just sort of like talk and try to learn and absorb knowledge from one another. I am kind of, so this 4-point line idea.
Yeah.
This might sound really dumb, but as a player, do you start shooting deeper threes?
So, like, it's kind of messing with them in a little bit. So, it definitely...
Like, the idea I get, spacing, okay? We'll start our offense deeper and spread the floor. But if you're standing there and someone passes you the ball and you're, like, a foot... I don't know. How far away from the three-point line is it?
I mean, it's probably 3 feet off the three-point
line. So, if you're, like,
line,
in between...
3 or 4 feet.
I mean, that's a deep shot.
So, so there are two things about this. One, when we asked them, like, what do you think of the four-point line? Deshaun Burke and Heath Cheatham, like, laughed, because they're like, you know, it takes some getting used to. And there was a point, there was one drill they were doing where, so it was like, okay, start on one wing, right? Wing on the left. And then, so put a guy there, put a guy wing on the right, and then put a guy in the corner. And so it was basically you swing the ball to the guy to the corner, and then the guy who passes the ball to the corner, after he passes, he gets a pass, and so all three of them shoot they pass the ball, except for the corner guy who just catches it and shoots it. And the idea was, I mean, start on the 4-point line, and when you accept the pass, like, step into your shot, and then no matter where you are, if you're, you know, if you start behind the 4-point line, when you step into your shot, you're not going to be 18 feet. You're going to be not on the line.
Yeah.
It's going to be a three no matter what.
Right. But you'll be closer to the line because you're stepping into your jump shot instead of, like...
Sure, but you're also stepping into your shot from the 4-point line rather than, like, you know, 1 foot off 3-point line and potentially being on the line and all that crap.
A foot on the foot, right. 3-point line, which
so,
is bad. Yeah.
So there was a point, though, when you could tell that they were just kind of fading a little bit further and further and further, and they were stepping into their shot, like, into the 4-point line. And you were like, see, like, this is kind of an issue. Yeah. Because, like, you don't necessarily want guys shooting from way, way out there if they can't, you know? Yeah. But at the same time, it's smart because I think guys are aware of the surroundings enough that in a game, they're going to know, like, okay, I'm way too far out.
Right.
But at the same time, though, they're going to be cognizant and they're going to be used to being from that far out anyway. So basically the idea is if you're coming off the ball screen, instead of, you know, coming off a ball screen at the top of the key, taking one dribble and taking a 15-footer, you're doing that and you're taking a three.
Hmm.
Or if you come off like a dribble handoff and you're right at the top of the key, then it's a three rather than like a 15-footer. So it's really smart, but you're right. It is going to kind of create this, like, man, they're taking shots from way, I mean, like way out. And Fred Hoiberg has kind of talked about this where he has noticed it kind of doesn't matter how good of a 3-point shooting teams are, defenses are guarding you closer no matter what. So, like, and this is true to an extent last year, even when Nebraska was not shooting threes very well, they were still pretty high up on, you know, guarding. And so basically the idea is it creates more space and all this stuff.
Right.
So he's kind of banking that teams are going to guard him up that high anyway. Which if they do, then that opens a lane and all these
attack
different options. So, so it's interesting. And I'm so curious how it's going
to, I'm so eager to see. So, Jordan Sperber, who's like this, he's kind of like a former video guy who now analyzes a lot of stats and tweets some stuff out. I can't remember what his Twitter handle is, but you should follow him if you're not. And you're into college basketball and the numbers, follow him because he has really good stuff. But he tweeted out this like chart of offensive efficiency in ball screens over the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Like which coaches have the which coaches use it the most and which coaches are most efficient with it.
Mm-hmm.
And Hoiberg and McDermott didn't use ball screens a ton compared to the rest of the coaches that were analyzed, but they were both really efficient with it.
Hmm.
And so I'm so curious just to watch both of these guys who, sure, I know there are a lot of critics for what Greg McDermott has or hasn't accomplished at Creighton during his tenure. Like, the Jays have kind of kept running into a wall. Mm-hmm. They've done it a couple times where they want to get over the hump, but they just haven't. But his offense is really advanced and innovative.
Generally the top 15 efficiency in terms of KenPom, right?
I mean, opposing coaches praise what they do on offense, and as, particularly in ball screens, they put teams in binds. And when you have shooters, that's a big thing. It's a big reason why it can be so difficult to guard. But to see these coaches sort of like, I mean, I kind of already have a general sense of what Creighton's going to be or how they're going to mold their team and try to attack offensively. But to see what Fred Hoiberg does, to see what McDermott does to adjust, like, these are two of the, I mean, it seems kind of, Fred Hoiberg was an NBA coach. So comparing him to Greg McDermott, like, maybe I'm not giving Fred his due fully, but they are two of the more advanced minds in college game in terms of offense and designing plays, and the numbers kind of bear that out. So I'm really curious to see. I think it's going to be just fun to watch basketball in the state of Nebraska.
That's seriously. And I'm so curious too, because Fred is, it is interesting because he has been thinking about the NBA the last 4 years. And I've written about this before too, of like, you know, what he did at Iowa State is normal now. It's normal to have bigs at the five that also play point. It's normal to shoot a ton of threes. That was kind of abnormal when he kind of revolutionized some ways. And now it's normal.
Yeah.
And so I've always thought, like, okay, well, what?
How does he adjust?
What does he do now?
It's like, so I grew up in Indiana and I went to Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Tiller was one of the coaches who brought the spread to the Big Ten. And so when he was doing it and, you know, Drew Brees was running the show, mm-hmm. everyone's like, what in the world? We have all these big dudes.
Yeah,
like, how do we keep up?
Yeah.
And then everyone started running the spread, mm-hmm. and then Purdue was kind of like, kind of went down, and Joe Tiller ended up, you know, he was eventually hit, his tenure ran out, and he had to step down, and Purdue had to go a different way.
But now they're back to the spread with Jeff Brom.
That's true, with Brom, who's another innovative guy. But so that that's like part of it, though.
Yeah.
The idea that you've got to keep evolving.
Yeah. So now there's
even
like
when you're already a leader, because it's a copycat sport. Everyone's going to take plays from everyone else. And so that, and they see what works and that works. So we're all going to do it. And then how do you stay ahead?
Yeah,
how do you
like
stay
the,
one step ahead?
This year and the next couple of years, it's like the second wave of Fred Hoiberg. Because if you're a revolutionary mind once, generally you can think you can do it again. Generally you're smart. Like Nick Saban has transformed the way he does. Basically he realized like, oh, I wonder what happens if I put a quarterback who can run. What a concept. And Alabama's like impossible. Like, you know, I mean, other than Clemson, but you know what I mean? Like forever he had like A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron was like Elvis Gerbach. He wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what this second wave is. And he's studying the Rockets and he's studying the Atlanta Hawks. And it's like, I'm so curious. What does he see? Like, what is he thinking about? And what does he want to do? Cause I don't know. And it's going to be really curious. And it's too bad we can't watch, but it's also not the end of the world.
Right. And I doubt that they're going to be diving too deep in their playbook. And that's actually
they
one thing.
They only have 10% of it in. Yeah.
That's one thing to note too about this. For both Creighton and Nebraska when they're on their little foreign tours and you see the stats come back. I mean, especially for the younger guys, the newcomers who haven't necessarily had this much on their plate before, right now it's a very low, like you said, 10% of the playbook.
Yeah.
You know, in October or November, that's when it gets real. That's when you start having to remember – not only are you trying to recall every aspect of your defensive scheme and how you handle each situation and then what plays you want to run on offense, but then you start incorporating a scouting report and you're going to class. And so mentally, how do you juggle all of that? And if it's just your first time doing it, even for, you know, I think about Creighton just added this grad transfer, Kelvin Jones, like he was at Idaho State. It's a different level of, you know, sort of basketball acumen required to play high major ball than at the lower level in D1, and same for that versus JUCO and D2 and all that. So in high school basketball as a senior in high school coming to be a freshman in D1, there's a lot that's going to be on their plate and how do they handle it?
Yeah.
From what I've seen over the last couple of years, just watching some of Creighton's freshmen, a lot of time they start fast and then they hit a wall.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how do you, well, usually they hit multiple walls, but that there's usually a wall that they hit at some point in the training camp, the preseason camp. And it depends on the guy. Each guy breaks through it at a different time.
Yeah.
But eventually you hit a wall and I feel like that first year for newcomers is always about how do you bounce back from adversity, because you're going to hit it no matter what. And some of it's physical, like, oh my gosh, the grind is incredible. I didn't expect this. But I think a lot of it's mental, just having to deal with failure and having to deal with all the things that the coaches are asking you to do, because there's a lot.
And Nebraska has 11 guys
that are going through that. Right.
Like they've got Derek Walker, who played at Tennessee and looks like it. So he kind of gets it. DeShaun Burke from Robert Morris, Delano Banton from Western Kentucky, Cam Mack from JUCO, Gervais from JUCO. You know, it's just all these guys. Hanif Cheatham, like, he played at Marquette, but then he played at Florida Gulf Coast, so he kind of gets it. But it's just totally different. And I don't mean this to really disparage Nebraska fans, because I think that they're similar to a lot of different fan bases, but you know, there's this feeling that I get from fans that's, all right, well, we got the talent, we got the coach. Cool, let's do it. Like, this is not, hey, this is the year. But, like, you know, I sensed that there was some surprise that Fred Hoiberg came out after the first practice of media availability and was like, yeah, like, I leave practice pissed off because we're sloppy. And we're like, what? You got the coach and you got the players.
Right.
This is going to take some time. And that's why I think it's going to be pretty ugly in Italy, because got all these new guys and they're all going to, you're right, they hit, you know, different players hit different walls at different times too. There could be a guy that comes in that looks really good right now, but in a month and a half, whenever, you know, he rolls his ankle or something, and he doesn't want to play anymore because it kind of hurts, but he's like physically able to play.
But he doesn't know it
because
he hasn't dealt with it before.
Or like he's just tired and he's worn out and doesn't know how to recover, and he doesn't understand he can't get Chipotle every night. Like, it's just, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of levels to this. And so it's going to be curious how they collectively grow and also individually grow and kind of where that's met. And you're coming from another perspective, and we don't talk about this a ton, but you know, Fred Hoiberg was just coaching professionals who are at the highest level of basketball. And you go from that to teaching people how to shoot a basketball and like block out and doing shell drills and doing like basic stuff. And so I think some of the frustration likely comes from Fred was just like not too long ago coaching Derrick Rose and coaching Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, where you don't maybe like, hey, Jimmy, let's talk about your jump shot for a minute. And I don't know if Jimmy would listen anyway.
He should have taught that team how to shoot jumpers.
Probably.
Like, cause
especially Rondo.
It wasn't his fault, but they didn't get a lot of shooters when he was there.
They probably could use the Kyle Korver. But what my point is...
I know
is,
what you're saying, though. Professionals.
There's a point where you come down where he's coming down and they're coming up, and there's probably some frustration there a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like... I think deep down, Fred knows this is what he wants to do, but it's just going to... I think that there was a time last year... Actually, I know that there was a time last year when Scott Frost was like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? We're 0-6! Like, why? I didn't want to come here and do this. This sucks. And so, like, there's going to be a point with that, but, like, if, you know, Nebraska goes, wins 9 or 10 games this year, Scott's like, oh, of course, this is why I did it.
Yeah.
So that's going to be in the future for Nebraska basketball, I think, but it's a grind right now. It's going
to
take some time.
It's so interesting to try to project it, because this is the time of year when people kind of start a little bit. There's because teams are practicing, and it's going to go on foreign tours. You've seen some of the national analysts put out some way too early lists of, you know, here's how I rank the Big Ten teams, and here's my top 25 and stuff. And you hear positive things about Fred Hoiberg's team, but nobody's really gone out. I haven't seen a national analyst like go out on the limb and say, well, I think it's the top half of the Big Ten team.
Yeah, no. The only thing I've seen is someone say that Nebraska is a sleeper pick, which to do what? I don't really know. It is, and this is coming from someone who, like, right after the national title game of any national title game, when there's like the way too early top 25 thing, I combust. Like, I hate it.
Yeah.
But it is borderline irrational to try and come up with here's a prediction for the season.
Or
here's
for Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Because I think Creighton has
Creighton is okay. You could probably guess it.
They look like a top 30, top 40 team.
Yeah, I could see Creighton being a top 25 team for sure.
Yeah, depending on health, obviously. Yeah. They got to keep the big guys healthy.
When Nebraska, they could win 20. They could win 10. I have no idea. Now, they're going to at least win like 9 because of their non-conference schedule. It's like not great.
We did not talk about that. Whoops. That's all right.
I think we did last time, didn't we?
Oh, did we?
I think we did last time. I mean, it's not great, which is on purpose. But anyway, it is interesting because I get that a lot. I get a lot of like, what are expectations and who are the starting five and who? And this is like normal things to talk about a year ago for a team that was established. But when you're completely starting over, I mean, it was kind of like Scott Frost first year. I hate that I'm bringing up football so much, but
football season. It's hard not to. It's
but
on
I didn't.
Mind.
I mean, like, think about it though. Like, if someone was like, last year, what's the expectation for Scott Frost and Nebraska? I don't know. He was just coaching at UCF, and I don't know if his system works in the Big Ten. You don't really know. And with Fred Hoiberg, it's kind of the same thing, where it's like, well, I don't know. I don't know who the starting five is. They could have a kid come in that they think is going to start because they really like him, and he's got a big attitude problem, and he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that happens in recruiting. Or they could have a guy get hurt. Or they, you know, so it's just, it's difficult.
Right.
And
one or two guys in basketball can really...
Totally change the season. Look at what Isaac Copeland's injury did.
Exactly.
And I also think, too, and this might be true for Creighton because there's not a lot of people... they're going to have some guys that aren't there, but I think with these trips, what people want to hear and want to know is when they return from Italy or from Australia, you're like, all right, I have a better idea of what they're going to be and what their record is, and here's what it is. But do you feel like when Creighton comes back, you're going to be like, all right, I get it. I understand.
No, probably not. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to change what I feel today.
Yeah.
They've practiced 10 times now, so what my observations have been probably not going to change after 3 weeks. But yeah. I'm actually kind of, I sort of am looking at it to see if I can affirm some of the theories that I have, maybe. Yeah. So, like, which is probably not the best way to look at it, because I might, there might be some false positives in there. But, you know, like, I think you're right in that it's hard to make some sort of declarative statement based on what happens in exhibition games in August. Mm-hmm. As much as we would like to.
Right. And as much as I hate to be the guy that's like, well, you know, society. But in society today, we want to know.
Oh, my gosh.
We want to know. Right. Okay. No. But I'm not. I mean, like,
I'm just kidding.
People want to know, like,
today,
how many games are they going to win? I want to know now. Well, what do I need to expect? Especially Nebraska fans who are like, listen, man, like, I just got my heart torn out and thrown into a bucket of oil. Like, just tell me if I need to care. Just tell me if I need to care.
Right.
And if that's what you're a Nebraska fan, you're thinking, like, you should care because it's the team that you cheer for. But I can't help you yet because I don't know how good they'll be. So I think that's part of it. And also just because it's July, almost August, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like there's nothing going on. Week two of football season, we'll be complaining about Trevor Lawrence playing, you know, only three quarters or something stupid in football. Right. And we won't have to, you know, worry about these things. So I don't think we'll learn much about either team when they come back. But at the same time, we'll learn a lot of small things that would make come into play in December.
We'll do a pod at some point after it and try to recap
as
we can.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll finish like we always do.
Oh, gosh.
Creighton and Nebraska, if they were to play today.
Oh, man.
I mean, I haven't seen anything for Nebraska, so I have like, at least you've seen a practice.
Yeah.
Whereas I've seen nothing, so I have no clue what kind of team it is.
Yeah.
So I'll lean with experience and pick Creighton. But
I'm picking Creighton.
Even though if they played today, Jacob Eberson would be out, Marcus Sigurowski would be out.
Oh yeah.
The good thing for the Jays is that Nebraska also doesn't have big, so like
right, yeah. It's just gonna
be five guards versus five guards. It'd be a pickup game.
The tallest guy on the floor might be 6'6".
Creighton is 6'7" guy. Christian Bishop 6'7", so there you go.
I'm trying to think. If they don't I'm trying to think how tall Matei Kavass is. I think he's maybe 6'6", 6'7".
But he's a shooter, like
but
perimeter
he's a shooter,
guy.
Right, yeah. But he's big. He's bigger than I thought he'd be. And he's long. He's got an NBA body. Yeah, I think Creighton definitely wins. I was looking at
It'd be really fun if they just played like a...
Why don't they do a secret/not-secret scrimmage every summer?
Yeah, just in the summer. Just have the guys accidentally, quote-unquote, accidentally meet up in...
You're telling me Mike Sauer can't get that figured out.
Yeah, what's Mike doing? We got to just have him, hey, we're going to do a photo shoot. Just bring your basketball shoes.
Where would that happen, though? It's got to be, like, outside somewhere, right?
Yeah, like, is there an outdoor court in Gretna or something that we can, like...
Or, like, Ashland?
Yeah, there we go.
Like, an elementary school in Ashland like, a basketball court outside?
We could just have the two teams match up, and they could just go once a month or something like that.
At the end of that. But then they might become friends, and like, you don't want that.
Right. We need Reds Pirates animosity.
Yeah, we do.
We don't necessarily need.
We don't want fights.
Yeah.
But boy, wasn't it fun to argue about the word. What was it? Desperate?
Yeah. That's right. Oh, good stuff. All right, Chris. Good to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
You can jump back on the football train for a bit, but then we'll steal you back for some
basketball. Sorry if I talked too much about it. I was trying to. I hate having to go back and forth in my head with it, so sorry if I brought it up too much.
No, okay. That's all good. I did it too. You can't escape it. We're in Nebraska. That's how it is.